This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines here: Iran slams South Korean president anti-Iranian and interventionist remarks, saying that it expects an explanation from Seoul. Over a dozen universities and colleges across the Israeli-occupied territories witness fresh protests. And teachers in England and Wales are planning to go on strike as the UK faces a wave of industrial action by nurses. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmati, and these are our top stories this hour. Foreign Ministry has strongly reacted to the South Korean president calling Iran the enemy of the UAE. It slammed the comments as diplomatically invalid and meddlesome. The ministry spokesman says that the remarks show a failure to fully grasp the historical and friendly relations between Iran and the Persian Gulf littoral states, including the UAE. Nasser Kanani says that those relations are positive and fast-moving. He added that Iran is now awaiting an explanation from the Seoul of South Korea, the government, in the UAE on Sunday. South Korean president alleged that Iran is the biggest threat to the Arab country. Yook Soo-yeol made these remarks during a visit to the contingent of South Korea special forces in the UAE. Meanwhile, South Koreans have questioned a massive arms and nuclear deal with the United Arab Emirates, which was boosted during President Yoon Suk-yeol's trip in Abu Dhabi. The UAE has already purchased a $3.5 billion weapons package from South Korea. Many oppose these arms sales, saying that such measures would only foment conflicts in the world. Our correspondent Frank Smith reports.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol visited the United Arab Emirates this week to boost trade ties. South Korea is constructing 4 nuclear reactors for the UAE as President Yoon supports a return to nuclear energy.
Korea has also declared its 2050 carbon neutrality goal. To achieve this goal, we're working to rapidly restore the nuclear power system, which supplies carbon-free electricity, and boost the supply of clean energy, such as renewable energy and hydrogen energy.
President Yoon also seeks to boost weapons exports to the UAE on the heels of a $3.5 billion deal for a South Korean anti-ballistic missile system. This despite a controversial surveillance lapse in South Korea.
President Yoon and the South Korean military have been under intense criticism following a recent incursion of 5 North Korean drones across the border. President Yoon and his wife Sunday visited a detachment of South Korean soldiers stationed in the UAE since 2011.
South Korea has become a major arms exporter of fighter jets, tanks, and guided missiles, which have found prominent use in the war in Yemen. South Koreans, however, view such weapon sales with caution.
It's good to sell weapons in terms of earning foreign currency through our exports, but it's not good if those weapons are then actually used in a war.
I know that area has had a lot of conflict and war, so I think selling weapons there will just make the situation worse.
South Korea is now the world's 7th largest arms dealer, with prominent exports to Southeast Asia, Poland, and Saudi Arabia. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Protests are continuing against the new far-right Israeli cabinet by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, with thousands of students joining in. Protests were held in over a dozen universities and colleges and campuses, including in Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Al-Quds. They left their classes, students that is, to stage a coordinated strike against the cabinet plans for the so-called judicial reforms. Four of the students were arrested in Al-Quds, with protest organizers complaining about bullying by police forces. The new Israeli cabinet is under public fire for its attempt to decrease the power of the Supreme Court. It is now in favor. This is aimed at the Prime Minister's own efforts to dodge the charges of bribery and fraud against him.
Israel is experiencing unprecedented mass protests. Tens of thousands of Israelis have hit the streets in several cities, including Tel Aviv, Al-Quds, and Haifa, for the second consecutive week to protest against plans by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to implement changes to Israel's legal system and weaken the Supreme Court. The demonstration presents an early challenge to Netanyahu and his far-right minister, Etmar Ben-Gvir, who has ordered police to take tough action if protesters block roads or display Palestinian flags. In defiance of Ben-Gvir's call, some footage showed Palestinian flags on display. The crowd in Tel Aviv swelled to more than 80,000 people despite rainy weather there. Demonstrators, many covered by umbrellas, held signs and chanted slogans like criminal government or the end of democracy. But what were they protesting that gave way to such a large crowd to come out?
We would like to say that the current coalition in Israel would like to change the regime to make us like a dark regime in the world, and we will not accept it, and will fight for this democracy.
The focus of the protests was how the new coalition cabinet, headed by Netanyahu, wants to decrease the power of the Supreme Court in its own favor. This as Netanyahu is trying to escape charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. The situation has already angered Israeli officials, including the president. Herzog also warned that Israel faced, quote, a historic constitutional crisis over the contested judicial reform plan. But despite all that criticism, Netanyahu has pledged to complete legislating the reforms in a way that will correct what needs correcting, totally protect individual rights, as he claims, and restore the public's faith in the justice system that so much requires such reform. The legal changes could help Netanyahu evade eviction of corruption or even make his trial disappear entirely.
Israel is grappling with numerous issues. The regime faces the challenge posed by the rise of new Palestinian resistance groups, as well as a biting cost of living crisis and internal political divisions. All of these point to a question whether Israel is riding for a fall, especially seeing the comments by former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who warned back in May that the regime could disintegrate before its 80th anniversary.
In office for more than just 2 weeks, Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing cabinet has launched proposals to weaken the Supreme Court by giving parliament the power to overturn court decisions with a simple majority vote. It also wants to give parliament control over the appointment of judges and reduce the independence of legal advisors. Israeli opposition leaders, former attorneys general, and the president of Israel's Supreme Court have all spoken out against the plan. They said the move would cripple judicial independence, foster corruption, set back minority rights, and deprive Israel's courts of credibility that helps fend off war crimes abroad. critics said the changes could help Netanyahu evade conviction in his corruption trial or make the trial disappear altogether. But are these protests against Netanyahu himself? Netanyahu's premiership in the past has been fraught not only with trying to escape corruption charges, but also violations like Palestinian rights, settlement construction, and other hot-button issues that exist between Palestinians and Israel. Inside Israel, the opposition against the current right-wing cabinet and Netanyahu is so high and elevated that a new movement has been created to promote and encourage Israelis to leave Israel, with a group planning to move 10,000 Israeli Jews in the first stage of its project. Meanwhile, grassroots Palestinians with no affiliation to any of the resistance groups are rising against the regime. Den of Lions is one, an independent armed Palestinian group operating in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. In the meantime, the current right-wing cabinet and its far-right minister Ben-Gvir are advocating more violence against Palestinians, which would lead to more deaths, including violations like settlement buildings, changing the demographics of Al-Aqsa and Al-Quds, and other core issues. The cost of living is one other major issue protesters are angry with. After all, Israel is expensive and has one of the highest costs of living in the world. With all the crises the regime is grappling with, what seems to be on the corner for officials in Tel Aviv is what a protester said during a Saturday demonstration. "I came here to demonstrate against the anti-democratic steps of the new cabinet. This can be the start of the end of the Jewish state as we know it. Is this cabinet igniting the start of the end of Israel?" This exactly signifies what former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak expressed concern about, the survival of Israel. Barak said the entity will cease to exist before the 80th anniversary of its 1948 establishment. He said throughout the Jewish history, the Jews did not rule for more than 80 years, except in the two kingdoms of David and the Hasmonean dynasty. And in both periods, their disintegration began in the 8th decade.
The United Nations says it is willing to negotiate another truce deal in Yemen, urging the warring sides to go for a sustainable settlement. The UN envoy to Yemen advised against a, quote, piecemeal approach focused on individual needs. She said that the key elements of the initial truce deal were holding. However, he warned that the limited military activity in front lines and escalatory political and economic measures could reignite violence. The initial truce pact first came into effect in April 2022 and rolled over twice until its expiry in October. Yemen repeatedly complained of Saudi violations of the deal and refusal to properly lift its siege. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a war and blockade on Yemen in 2015. The aggression has so far left hundreds of thousands dead and created what the UN calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. In the UK, teachers and nurses are set to go on a wage strike and a fresh headache for the government. Over 23,000 schools in England and Wales will be impacted by the teacher strike planned for February the 1st. In Scotland, they have stopped working, which is close to many allies. Britain's largest education union says the government's offer 5% rise. In fact, the wage cut due to spiraling prices. Tens of thousands of nurses, that is, in England are also planning strikes in February. Their trade unions say the stoppage will take place if progress is not made by the end of this month in negotiations with the gourmet months of strikes across various sectors. They have caused widespread disruption in the UK, which is suffering from a decades high government and government issues and is unable to afford big wages. Ukrainian soldiers have arrived in the United States to receive training on how to use the missile system. The personnel now at the military school in the state of Oklahoma say Kiev has not disclosed the size of the consignment, but the Pentagon has put their number at up to 100. It said that the course will take several months. The U.S. announced late last month that it was ready to send Patriot missile systems to Ukraine, to the country, to counter Russian attacks. Russia has warned against the deployment of the system. The Kremlin says that any crew accompanying would be, quote, legitimate priority targets for the Russian military. Meanwhile, EU faces economic uncertainty in 2023 due to the gas supply issues and energy sanctions against Russia are backfiring to some extent. The European Commission has acknowledged, Jerem Hughes reports from Brussels.
On Monday, Eurozone finance ministers marked the occasion of Croatia becoming the 20th member of the Eurogroup. However, Zagreb joins the Euro at a very precarious time for the currency. The big question is, where will the EU get its gas in 2023 and at what price?
While high storage levels and lower demand have helped to bring energy prices down, the crisis is certainly not over.
The EU insists its move to cut out Russian energy over the war in Ukraine has damaged Moscow. But for the first time, there's an acknowledgement of collateral damage.
If you are cutting trade, if you are cutting imports, exports, the bilateral relations with the partner with whom you had a lot of to do with before, then of course there is some negative impact on our side.
Experts say the EU has always been overly dependent on imports of gas, oil and raw materials. It's a reality that won't change.
They all have to be imported in a way that other regions don't. And that means that the European Union is very vulnerable, and it also has to look very carefully where it makes geostrategic alliances.
To obtain essential supplies, the EU will turn a blind eye to crimes committed by the likes of Saudi Arabia and Qatar, according to analysts. Despite enormous economic uncertainty at home, the EU is promising more financial aid for Ukraine.
We will continue to provide strong military, financial, diplomatic and political support to Ukraine and to the Ukrainian people. Together, the EU and its member states have contributed nearly 50 billion euros.
The European Commission has already organised 18 billion euro for Ukraine in 2023. The first tranche is currently being released. The EU will send a further 3 billion euro to Ukraine on Tuesday. As social inequality grows across the bloc, more and more people are asking, can we really afford to keep doing this? Jerem Hughes, Brussels.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
The recent riots in Brazil, affected by political virus from Washington, further weaken U.S. democracy. These riots were so familiar to those who observed the U.S. Capitol riots. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote in this regard, the riots in Brasilia have petered out, but the conundrums facing Washington are just beginning to bubble up. On January 8, supporters of former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, who refused to accept the results of the presidential election, stormed the country's Congress, Supreme Court, and the presidential palace. The scene is exactly the same as the one which followed the U.S. presidential election 2 years ago. More interestingly, Bolsonaro's governing style had kept itself consistent with that of former U.S. President Donald Trump in recent years. In terms of foreign policy, he aimed at pleasing his political base. In his views, domestic interests are more important than global responsibilities. He followed the decisions of the White House on a number of regional and international affairs. In his last days in office, Bolsonaro flew to Florida and was absent from the inauguration ceremony of Lula da Silva, the self-described definition of identity on whose Twitter account is still President of the Federative Republic of Brazil. On the next day of the Brazilian version of Capitol riots, Bolsonaro tweeted a photo showing himself lying on a hospital bed in Orlando, Florida, eager to disassociate himself from the vicious incident. The former president had repeatedly claimed Brazil's voting system is riddled with fraud and challenged the election he lost. After losing the election, angry Bolsonaro supporters staged protests in many places in Brazil. Democratic Representative Joaquin Castro of Texas accused Brazil's former leader of following Trump's playbook by using false claims of a rigged election to incite his supporters and cast doubt over the outcomes of a presidential election. Whether Bolsonaro has any connections with the riots is not important. One thing is undeniable. Trump virus, a variant of U.S. democracy, has undermined Brazil. Lula has kickstarted his third term as president 12 years after his last presidency. In his first two terms, he dropped the neoliberal development model in the economic field, safeguarded the interests of lower-class civilians politically, promoted social justice, and opposed the U.S. Monroe Doctrine, which sees Latin America as U.S. backyard diplomatically. At one point, like Hugo Chavez, he was an iconic figure in Latin Americans' pink tide or the turn to the left political wave. Lula's clear stance of being revolutionary, independent, and anti-American won widespread favor among the domestic people. He not only won the only re-election since the Brazilian military returned power to the people, but also brought the country into an unprecedentedly strong development cycle. Inevitably, he was also regarded as a thorn in the side of domestic and foreign forces who tried their best to maintain the old order. It is obviously not in the diplomatic interest of the U.S. regime, nor in line with the U.S. so-called values, for such an iconic figure of the Latin American left wing, who has a clear political background and conforms to broad public opinion, to regain the presidency. However, the White House has completely sided with Lula on the issue of Brasilia riots. Not only did U.S. President Joe Biden immediately express his desire to stand with the Brazilian people on Twitter, but he also issued a brief but clear-cut joint statement with the leaders of Canada and Mexico. Such enthusiastic support for left-wing leaders has amazed international public opinion. The value diplomacy emphasized by the Democratic Party appears to be worthless in this issue. It has made the world understand once again that no matter how U.S. foreign policy is decorated, it cannot escape the womb of double standards. On Capitol Hill, there are significant divisions in line with the executive branch. They control lawmakers from the Democratic Party, took all their anger over the January 6 riots out on Bolsonaro. However, the vast majority of lawmakers in the Republican Party opted for selective avoidance, and some have cautiously questioned the demand of ejecting Bolsonaro from the U.S. If the legislative branch no longer allows the executive branch to exercise discretion on the issue of whether he will leave or stay, American democracy will start a new round of mutation. Meanwhile, RT wrote in an op-ed, just as the U.S. was preparing for the second anniversary of its January 6th insurrection, ex-Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro went to Florida following election fallout in his own country. Of all the places in the world, Jair Bolsonaro could have fled to following his tumultuous defeat in a runoff election against his left-wing opponent, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. The United States may have been the least expected. After all, here is a country that most wanted men think Julian Assange and Edward Snowden escaped from, not to. Meanwhile, memories of its own so-called insurrection are still fresh in the minds of many Americans, some of whom are now holding the slippery reins of power. On January 6, 2021, following the defeat of then-U.S. President Donald Trump in 2020 presidential election, a throng of his supporters descended upon the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., in the belief that the election had been stolen. A similar script played out recently in Brasilia, the Brazilian capital, as Bolsonaro supporters ransacked Congress and the Supreme Court and surrounded the presidential palace in yet another check in the armor of computer-controlled elections. The violence, which the former right-wing president formally condemned, forced Lula to call for a state of emergency in the capital until January 31st. By comparison, although Trump quickly committed himself to an orderly transition of power, Bolsonaro didn't stick around to hand over the ceremonial presidential sash to Lula da Silva at the inauguration, a bold decision that the new Brazilian leader will not soon forget or forgive. Rather than stepping aside, the former Brazilian incumbent fled to the Republican stronghold of Florida, which was certainly no accident considering that the Sunshine State is home to both Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. This may prove invaluable should Lula make an extradition request for Bolsonaro. It would probably come as no surprise that the Democrats, a party that never misses a chance to change in political theater, are already doing exactly that. In the short term, Bolsonaro's American rendezvous shields him from any immediate legal tangles in Brazil, where he is under investigation in at least four criminal inquiries. But it goes without saying that Da Silva, who was in prison during Bolsonaro's 2019 inauguration on graft convictions that were later dismissed, would like nothing more than to exact some poetic justice on his ideological nemesis. That much was obvious in a thinly veiled threat Lula delivered to his predecessor.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. We have two very special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That's all right. Recently, the notorious Charlie Hebdo magazine in France again desecrated, we can say, with its caricatures and cartoons, the main characters of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, and in his recent versions, you know, the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, under the flag of the so-called freedom of speech, they are disrespecting and desecrating the religious beliefs of others. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, the religion of Islam is spreading fast in the Western countries, even after showing the extremist picture of Islam, as was ISIS, which according to some analysts, we can say was established by they themselves in the Western world in order to ruin the true picture of Islam. Islam still is growing and is the fastest growing religion in the world. The name Muhammad, we can say peace be upon him, is selected among the top rated, or it's better to say frequent name of the Muslims, still chosen for the children all across the world. The name Fatima for the girls, you know, and according to all these statistics, Islamophobia is losing its color. And recently, you know, when the World Cup was held in Qatar as a Muslim land, again, the people could see that Islam is a religion of peace and mercy, and Islamophobia was again decreased. I mean, the rate, according to statistics, has shown this. That's why, right after, we can say, the Qatar World Cup was held, we could see these cartoons again on Charlie Hebdo. Because they were punished once when they did this, you know. Some of their top editors were killed, were assassinated, you know, and so many we can say demonstrations were held in the Muslim lands against them. Their office was shut down for some times, and now we could see they are popping up again. Let's have your analysis on this.
You know, of course, in logic, we say that if a school of thought, if it has the most strong proofs and arguments, then, of course, they make use of proofs and arguments in their syllogisms. They bring, for example, the certain kind of premises and then make the conclusion. So this way, this kind of a school of thought will be the most strongest one that will be spread all over the world.
Yes.
If your proofs and arguments are strong, then everybody will accept you.
Okay.
This is what is happening for the Islam.
Mm-hmm.
If you did not have these kind of arguments and proofs, then of course you make use of disputation, or it's called jadal in the logical terms. Then even if you did not have disputational kind of means to spread your doctrines and teachings, then you may use of fallacy or moralata. And the lowest level is the poem, the provocation, and the oration. So when we look at these Charlie Hebdo's and this kind of media, we see that they make use of the lowest kind of means to spread their ideas, their teachings and doctrines to the world. But of course, everybody knows that this is the lowest one in terms of this logical kind of strength. So that is why I think since Islam is a religion, which is very much strong and powerful in terms of its main principles, its main doctrines, its main, let's say, ideas.
Okay.
That's why in the world, when the people who are in search of truth, who are searching the truth, when they find Islam, they find it with very strong kind of arguments, with very strong kind of logic. That's why they accept Islam.
Yes.
And this is what the enemies of Islam always fear.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not allow
the popular,
yeah, of course,
say, picture because, of Islam, yeah, in the
because,
Western world.
Yeah, they know Islam is not these things, as you rightly mentioned. Okay. Islam is not these things that are portraying by, for example, ISIS or these,
yes,
kind of groups.
Or
because they were
groups,
established.
Yes.
They were established by them themselves.
Yes.
And what they portrayed, what they picturized was not Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Islam is the thing that was spreaded, for example, in the eastern part of Asia in the history without any sword.
Yes.
If you see, look at the countries like Indonesia,
yes,
and Malaysia, yeah,
yes,
and Bangladesh and India, and these,
yes,
countries.
Okay.
You know, Muslims did not attack these areas. They've converted to Islam peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
Same is the case that right now is happening to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
That is why they fear a lot Islam, because when the population of Muslims increase in these countries,
yes,
of course, their political system will be changed into the Islamic system.
Okay.
Automatically, because,
yes,
the people who vote will,
okay,
be increased. So that's why I think, particularly when it comes to friends, they might fear a lot.
Yes, yes.
The number of the Muslims who is increasing nowadays in,
right,
those countries, yes.
The Europe and the European universities, for example, even the French universities, are known for their research. Didn't they research about, for example, the Holy Prophet of Islam, that he was, for example, a peaceful man, he was a man of mercy and kindness to the others, he was the one who saved the women from arrogance, we can say arrogant behaviors of the men, the tribal behaviors, and now they are disrespecting him, okay? And supporting him, you know? This is really sad that, for example, Macron does not criticize the behaviors of such a magazine under the name of freedom of speech.
Well, obviously, we know that the universities especially in the Western countries like Europe, they are under the coverage of the governments. Obviously, they are the government supported. On the other hand, you know, the governments, they approve the researches that are in line with their own goals.
Yes.
Macron and his government and the French government, we talk about French government because,
yes,
we have seen the role of French government especially in the Islamic Republic of Iran at the time of Reza Shah.
Yes.
When they came, they banned hijab in Iran. Like they started this, the
Kashf-e-hijab.
Or
yes,
the,
unveiling the women.
Unveiling the women in,
yes,
in here. In their own country, they had the same thing. They banned hijab in France. And all over the world, whenever we see anything against the Islam, it is from France.
Mm-hmm.
It is starting from there.
Yes.
So basically what...
The so-called intellectuals,
yes,
and bright-minded people.
Yeah. So basically they're not the intellectuals. Why? No. Because they're following the satanic,
mm-hmm,
we can say,
powers.
Path.
Yes.
Or the powers.
Yes.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, the best thing about all these things, the positive point,
mm-hmm,
which I take from all these things that they're doing against Islam, against the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei and others, or the Prophet ﷺ,
okay,
it shows that they do not have any logical proof against them.
Mm-hmm.
Any intellectual proof or the research against these personalities.
That's right.
Now, what happens when some such thing happens and the other person is your enemy, then you choose the other options. And the other option is assassinating the characteristic or character assassination.
Yes.
So this thing shows us they are doing character assassination,
yes,
of the Supreme Leader, for example,
yes,
or the Prophet of Islam,
okay,
or the Quran or the Islam. But they do not find anything which they logically can prove,
mm-hmm,
against the religion or these personalities.
Yes.
So it shows us how silly they or unwise these people are. Because, mm-hmm, you know, when you do not find any intellectual, you know, proof against someone, you should accept the proof. For example,
yes,
this is the way. Like, you know, you put the question that in the France, especially in the France or Europe, they have the universities which,
yes,
are doing research. So when you do research and you don't find anything,
mm-hmm,
against someone,
yes,
it is better to accept that ideology. And this is the path of, you know, the educational path or
That's
the,
right,
we can say, like, the intellectual path. Because they don't want to follow that, that's why they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, especially, Macron, because he is someone who has been, you know, instructed by, you know, the other powers,
yes.
For example, because they want to gain their own economical, you know, boost, which they do not have, which they didn't have for many years. For that cause, they want to attach themselves to others. But obviously, we see that even the Western powers, they are not backing Macron the way they should.
Yes.
And this is one of the biggest insults of the history.
That's right. In response to these insulting cartoons, Iran shut down Tehran-based French Research Institute in response to magazine's insulting cartoons. And this was a harsh, we can say, that's right, reaction to such an action. You know, this institute is a part of the cultural wing of the French embassy, used to study ancient Persian antiquities, and we let them to do so in our country. So how is it possible to disrespect our prophet or our leaders? We can say in the country, Prophet Muhammad, you know, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei and the others. Okay, that's right, Sheikh Rouhani. Up to now was about Prophet Muhammad and the Islamic sanctities. What about the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei? And recently, you know, he was disrespected by Charlie Hebdo magazine too. What about his personality?
I think the main problem when it comes to the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, Hafizahullah, is this, that this Islamic Republic of Iran is not like a blindly follower of them.
Mm-hmm.
While in other maybe Islamic countries, they may find the leaders of those countries, that they follow them.
Hand in hand with them. That's
exactly,
right.
But what the Supreme Leader does nowadays is this, that he very explicitly, very categorically opposes their doctrines, their teachings, their ideas. But at the same time, Islamic Republic of Iran is very much powerful and is very much strong in terms of ideology, I mean, in terms of, let's say, software, we can say, and at the same time, in terms of hardware. In both kind of areas, in both kind of cases, Islamic Republic of Iran is day by day becoming more and more powerful. This is what they fear.
Okay.
This is what they fear. Mm-hmm. You know, if, for example, the leader of Iran was like the leaders of other Islamic nations, for example, some of the Islamic nations, they would not care about.
Mm-hmm.
They would never, for example, portray these kind of things in their medias.
Yes.
When they, for example, insult the Supreme Leader, it shows that he is doing perfectly his job.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why they fear.
Yes.
Otherwise, if you're not important, mm-hmm. no one would care you.
Okay.
So that is why I think the main reason that nowadays they focused on Islamic Republic of Iran, and particularly on the Supreme Leader, is this, that they fear really the strengthenness of this Islamic State in this area, because the followers of this Islamic Republic in the world is increasing, and the Shiite Islamic teachings and doctrines are being spreaded all over the world, in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, even in America and Australia. So these are the things that they really fear, but they will never gain. They will gain nothing, because it is the history shows, and the history tells us that at the end of the day, it is the Muslims who will succeed.
That's right.
And those people who are in search of the truth, they will find Islam and they will follow Islam, because of the strong kind of basis or fundamentals that Islam has.
I just want to add one thing, what Sheikh has said. One of the reasons, you know, why the West is afraid is because the Shia school of thought does not have violence in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as they show in the movies or pictures, or, you know, the picture of ISIS, I don't know, you know, all these things.
Yes.
In the Shia school of thought, when they come, they don't have all these things. And this makes them being afraid of this religion. And that's why now, when they don't find anything against the Shia Islam, they are trying to, you know, spread the Shia phobia by making cartoons and all those things.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها لنا يوم القيامة. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها شفاعة أنا لها.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Official statistics show that the number of homeless people in London, England, has increased significantly due to increase in the cost of living. According to official statistics, the number of people living on the streets of London has increased by 24%. Britain's economy has faced many challenges in recent years. The exit of Britain from the European Union and the expenses caused by the control of the coronavirus pandemic and government incompetence have all contributed to the current economic crisis. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Metro website has covered this story and tells us more. According to new data, homelessness rate in London was higher than the national rate for England in 2022. Shelter says 1 in 58 people in London were sleeping rough last year, with London's borough councils describing the figures as devastating. The charity Shelter said it is expecting a sharp rise in homelessness in 2023, while local authorities call on the government to ensure changes are made amid the cost of living crisis. Shelter's chief executive, Polly Neat, said, "The new year should be a time of hope, but this isn't the case for the 271,000 homeless people who are facing a truly bleak 2023. Polinid added, a cold doorway or a grotty hostel room is not a home, but this is a reality for too many people today. Our frontline advisors are working to help people who are desperate to escape homelessness. From the parents doing all they can to provide some shred of a normal family life while stuck in an emergency bed and breakfast, to a person terrified of another night sleeping rough. Polinid said, with private rents and living costs continuing to soar, thousands of people are not just facing a winter of worry, they're at risk of losing the roof over their head. Polinid added, at shelter we are bracing ourselves for a sharp rise in homelessness in 2023. More than ever, we'll be relying on the public's generosity to help us support and campaign for all those fighting for a safe home. Figures from the charity show that the rate of homelessness in London last year was nearly three times higher than England as a whole, which saw one in 208 on the streets. Councillor Darren Rodwell, London Council's executive member for Regeneration, Housing and Planning, said these devastating figures reveal that London remains the epicentre of the homelessness crisis in Britain. Darren Rodwell added, everyone deserves a permanent home, but the chronic shortage of affordable housing in the capital means too many Londoners find themselves homeless and reliant on temporary accommodation arranged by their local council. The numbers are so high that they're equivalent to the entire population of a London borough. The website of Inside Housing has also covered the same story. According to new research by Shelter, one in 100 children in England are homeless and living in temporary accommodation. Shelter's analysis found that 26% of the parents of the 120,710 children reported their children are unhappy or depressed as a result of living in temporary accommodation, while many are forced to share beds. Shelter expects the number of homeless children to grow as the cost of living crisis deepens the housing emergency. Recently, Inside Housing's research revealed that more than 26,000 children under the age of five are homeless and living in temporary accommodation in England. Temporary accommodation, which can take the form of emergency hostels, bed and breakfast, one-room bedsits and cramped flats, is provided by councils to eligible families who become homeless. It is not designed as permanent accommodation, and families can be asked to move numerous times on short notice. The latest government data shows that 5,030 families are living in emergency bed and breakfast and hostel rooms, widely considered the worst type of temporary accommodation. Shelter study, the largest ever conducted and funded by Trust for London and the Joseph Rantree Foundation, involved more than 800 families with 1,600 children living in temporary accommodation throughout England. It looked at the impact of temporary accommodation on children's health, on children's well-being and education. It found that more than a third, or 35%, of homeless parents say their child or their children do not have a bed of their own and must share with another family member. Almost half, or 45%, of school-age children have arrived at school tired, late or hungry as a result of living in temporary accommodation. Bed and breakfast and hostels are often not equipped with suitable or any facilities for parents to cook meals, and noise from other residents and bed sharing mean children often struggle to sleep. Parents reported that just over 60% of children lack space to play in their temporary accommodation. One in four parents, or about 28%, said their children are finding it hard to make or keep friends as a result of living in temporary accommodation. This can be because they're embarrassed or ashamed of where they live, because they're unable to have friends over to play due to a lack of space or rules that forbid visitors. Sky News has also covered the same story and tells us more. A Scottish charity has raised the alarm about the potential of a notable rise in the death rate among the homeless in Scotland, as the entire United Kingdom grapples with a worsening economic crisis. The Simon Community Charity issued the warning as Scotland is still reeling from hundreds of homeless deaths that were registered last year. The network reported recent official figures from the National Records of Scotland reveal an estimated 250 homeless people died last year, which is around 50% higher than in 2017. Lorraine McGrath, the charity's chief executive, said it is a worsening position over the last 3 to 4 years, which is a massive concern. Lorraine McGrath added, the vast majority of these people are under the age of 45, adding that is because of the massive health inequalities they face and the stress on their body that leads to premature aging, that in turn leads to long-term conditions that may well be easily treatable. Lorraine McGrath added, people experiencing homelessness don't enjoy the same access to healthcare, which increases their risk of early death. Britain's year-on-year inflation rate stands at 10.7%, the highest in 4 decades. Meanwhile, the inflationary spiral is growing at a much faster pace than the average wage rise across the country. Food prices have skyrocketed almost 20%. Rising energy prices, along with soaring energy costs, have also largely contributed to Britain's cost of living crisis. Many labour unions have launched industrial action to press the government to enact wage hikes. The government, however, refuses to increase the wages, saying it would increase inflation. The government blames the economic doldrums partly on the COVID-19 pandemic, saying the country had been having a hard time recovering from the stagnation that used to govern the period. Experts, however, fault leadership incompetence and turbulence that saw the country changing several prime ministers over the past 2 years.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio.